Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
The T-Biz Podcast delivers T-News that you need to know. A recap of the week's major headlines with commentary and cultural trends hosted by Dan Bolton. It is the voice of origin for tea professionals and enthusiasts worldwide.
Tea nourishes and inspires. It is an ancient plant-based medicine that simultaneously heals and energizes the body as it soothes the mind. Making fine tea is a blend of artistry and craftsmanship. The $200 billion tea trade is fundamentally local, yet exerts global influence, employing millions to enhance the well-being of all. Hello, everyone. Here are this week's headlines. Sherlocka names Rajpal Obeyesekera tea board chair. Kenya abandons tea auction price minimums. And the Tetley UK factory walkouts continue. Plus, Pachamama Co-op profits from soil to cup. Pachamama is a farmer-owned global cooperative of 400,000 small coffee growers in Peru, Nicaragua, Guatemala, Mexico, and Ethiopia. The venture demonstrates that farmers who retain control of their supply chain earn significant returns by capturing the profits of value addition from soil to customer. Headquartered in Sacramento, California, the cooperative was co-founded by Thelion Tremaine, who, as CEO, is celebrating 20 years of innovation. Thelion joins T-Biz today to explain how a thriving, vertically integrated cooperative producing coffee has some valuable lessons on microeconomics for the tea industry. In memoriam, industrial titan Ratan Tata, former chairman of Tata Sons and a 2008 recipient of the Padma Vibhushan, India's second highest civilian award, died this week at 86. More in a minute, but first, this important message.
What makes a perfect cup of Ceylon tea? The perfect cup is from the tea businesses that ensure the protection of all the children living within their tea estates. We salute Kailani Valley, Telawakili, Bogawanthalawa, Harana, and Eliptia Tea Estates. Support Save the Children, Sri Lanka.
Long-tenured tea trader Rajpal Obeyesekera is the newly appointed chairman of the Sri Lanka Tea Board. Ministry of Plantations Industry Director General M.S. Arnirudra announced the appointment this week. One of the first of the newly elected Anura Kumara Dasenike administration appointees. Obeyesekera, 72, replaces Naraj Dimel, who was chair of the tea board since June 2022. The new chair began his career as a taster under Hari Jayawardena at the government-owned Consolidated Tea Export Company, more commonly called Consol Tea. In 1977, Obeyesekera was one of the three founders of the Stassen Group, a tea exporter and FMCG importer. During the 1980s and 90s, Stassen Group acquired several ventures, including Distilleries Corp, Lankin Milk Foods, Brown's Group, and Hatton Bank, and invested in several financial institutions. In 2015, he was appointed chairman of the Foreign Employment Bureau, leaving that post in 2019. The Sri Lanka Tea Board, founded in 1976, is a regulatory authority that oversees tea quality and provides marketing, branding, and global promotion of Ceylon tea. Obeya Sekra leads a board that faces several challenges, including declining tea yields due to aging stock and unpredictable weather conditions, high production costs compounded by labor shortages, and global competition from India, China, and Africa for orthodox black tea exports. Kenya has suspended the reserve price requirement for tea sold at the Mombasa auction, restoring the market to unfettered supply and demand dynamics. In a letter to tea stakeholders, East African Tea Trade Association Managing Director George Omuga writes that the decision will benefit exporters, brokers, and packers. The Kenya Tea Development Agency network includes 618,000 growers. Together, they produce most of the country's tea. In 2022, fearing a destabilizing market due to falling prices, Kenya established auction minimums, $260 per kilo for factories east of the Rift Valley, and a lower $240 per kilo minimum for tea grown west of the Rift. The prices averaged $2.34 per kilo, a minimum calculated to ensure a return higher than the cost of production to cushion farmers from losses. It didn't work. The Mombasa auction, largest by volume globally, sells tea from 9 African countries where price restrictions do not apply. Once the Kenyan minimums were enforced, sellers across the African community cut prices, creating a surplus of Kenyan tea. Warehouses bulged and prices plunged. Newly harvested tea was plentiful due to favorable weather and fertilizer subsidies. Compounding the situation was a high court ruling that permitted previously forbidden direct sales to foreign buyers who negotiated privately. Independent factories supplying the domestic market simply bypassed the auction. Tea generates 2% of the nation's agricultural gross domestic product and is one of the country's largest sources of foreign exchange earnings, generating $1.4 billion U.S. dollars in 2023. This year, approximately 100 million kilos of tea has yet to be sold. The East African Trade Association, which operates the auction, urged players to, quote, observe ethical tea pricing practices to ensure that teas are not sold at prices below production costs, end quote. All teas offered through the direct sales overseas window should be sold at a price above the prevailing auction prices, writes Omuga. Tea exports rose in volume during the first half of the year as earnings topped $794 million, about 102 billion Kenyan shillings, as bargain hunters in Pakistan, Egypt, the UK, Russia, and Saudi Arabia increased shipments. Striking workers at a Tetley tea factory in northeast England who walked off the job on September 20th and intermittently since remain firm in their demand for better pay. Workers at the Eagles Cliff factory told BBC they had authorized 12 more strike dates during the next 2 months. According to a statement from the GMB union, around 150 Tata Consumer Products owned facility workers in Teesside say wages have not kept pace with rising costs. A Tata spokesperson told Retail Dive, quote, we are not immune to the difficult economic circumstances facing families and businesses, but we do believe the pay award offers made by us to be fair, end quote. We are disappointed with the decision to strike, particularly when we have two offers on the table which the unions decided not to present to members before going to the ballot, said the spokesman. Tata said workers were offered a 4.4% pay raise compared to the 7% negotiated in last year's contract. GMB organizer Paul Clark said, quote, these women worked their fingers to the bone for this company, providing the UK with its favorite cup of tea, but they're paid a pittance and it is just not right, end quote. Workers feel saddened and hurt by the way their employer has treated them, Clark told BBC. He added, county bosses need to be clear. These women will not be intimidated and will not back down until they want a pay rise that allows them a decent standard of living, end quote. GMB said workers asked for a one-year deal. The national minimum wage rose by 9.8% last year, and that's what members are focused on, end quote. Next, Arvinda and Antharaman in Bengaluru reports on this week's India Tea News.
India Tea News for the week ending 11th October 2024. Bonus updates for North India. Last week, Darjeeling's tea garden employees went on a 12-hour strike demanding a 20% bonus, refusing to accept the 13% that was offered. The Statesman reported that after the fifth round of tripartite talks on the bonus issue ended without consensus, the state government had to intervene and they issued an advisory to the management asking that they pay 16% as a bonus, adding that the tea gardens facing financial difficulties can negotiate this percentage through discussions with unions. And this advisory covers tea workers in Darjeeling, Kashong and the Kalimpong Hills. Bonuses were to be dispersed by 4th October, given that the country celebrates the Dashera festival this week, particularly important festival in Bengal. However, trade unions have not been happy with the 16%, and the State Labour Department has informed them that another round of talks will be held in Calcutta on 6th November. In other news, the Tea Board announces the Tea Development and Promotion Scheme, which comes with a budget of 664.09 crores or $79 million. And this scheme, which extends for a two-year period that began 2023, broadly covers plantation development and quality upgradation, tea promotion and market support, technological intervention, research and development, welfare and capacity building measures. And this covers several immediate concerns such as replanting, proper pruning, adherence to quality plucking, soil health, product development and diversification, and value addition. There seems to be a heavy emphasis on branding and promotion, and these schemes are open to register stakeholders from within the industry starting on the 25th of this month. And lastly, a 34-year-old man, Gangaraya in the Nilgiris, was walking through a tea estate when a wild elephant attacked him. He was found seriously injured and rushed to the hospital but succumbed to his injuries. This is a third casualty in Kangara in 2 months. The villagers staged a protest calling for the government to do something to prevent more deaths. While man-elephant conflict is prevalent around the country, all the tea regions are struggling with this problem.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
Hi, I'm Nish. I grew up in an organic tea farm and founded Nepal Tea Collective in 2016. Tea is not just a beverage for me, but a catalyst for social change, sustainably empowering hardworking artisans like my parents for the past 30 years. I'm on a mission to make the whole world aware of the goodness of Nepali teas and the good that comes from supporting growers in this remarkable land. If you haven't tasted Nepali teas yet, you're missing out. Our award-winning teas are making headlines. Find out why. Visit Nepal Tea Collective's website to get a free sample of this extraordinary taste of the Himalayas. That's nepalteacollective.com. Or just send me an email at nish, N-I-S-H, at nepalteacollective.com. Cheers.
Pachamama is a farmer-owned global cooperative of 400,000 small coffee growers in Peru, Nicaragua, Guatemala, Mexico, and Ethiopia. The venture demonstrates that farmers who retain control of their supply chain earn significant returns by capturing the profits of value addition from soil to customer. Headquartered in Sacramento, California, the cooperative was co-founded by Thaleon Tremaine, who, as CEO, is celebrating 20 years of innovation. Palian joins T-Biz today to explain how a thriving, vertically integrated cooperative producing coffee has some valuable lessons on microeconomics for the tea industry. Palian Tremaine has been involved in business development for the past 25 years. He holds a master's in entrepreneurial studies and marketing from Texas McCoom School of Business and an MBA from Pontificia Universidad Católica in Chile. A former Peace Corps volunteer in Bolivia, he was a volunteer cooperative leader of the U.S.-Cuba Working Group of the National Cooperative Business Association. Congratulations on being named the 2024 Sustainable Food Gold Award winner in the Sustainability Pioneer category. The award commemorates visionaries and trailblazers and is well deserved.
Well, thank you very much for those kind words.
Pachamama is America's first coffee roaster and coffee retailer to be 100% owned and governed by farmers. Palian, what has happened over the past 20 years that has made you more confident in this business model?
I got involved about 20 years ago, shortly after a number of coffee producer leaders gotten together with this very concept to create their own business in the United States. So the great thing I think about Pachamama and looking back at 20 years is that they did something everyone said they couldn't do. Right. Everyone, believe me, we went around and tried to get money from we knocked on all the doors and a lot of people told us, crazy, you can't do this, you shouldn't do this, all this stuff. But they did it, and they own the whole thing, and they still own it all. There's so many great lessons here, and one of them is that if you're going to try to solve these very complicated problems in coffee, you have to have the long view. You're not going to solve these problems in 5 years. And in business, nowadays, capitalism, as it is, you know, it's everything's on a five-year maybe a 7-year model. And that just isn't the way to think about it. So of course, a lot of investors didn't want to participate in Pachamama because we had a long view. And they also want ownership, which they recognize is where the power and the money is. So to the credit of these visionary producers over 20 years ago, to have this model, to build this model, and to hire me to help bring it to market, it's really revolutionary in so many ways, and they deserve all the credit for that. And I'm talking about Merlin Presa at Prode Co-op in Nicaragua, Carlos Reynoso, Manos Campesinas in Guatemala, the late Raul del Aguila from Coca in Peru. I mean, these folks and many others really, really could see that a model like Pachamama would work in coffee. And yeah, it took us a long time to do it. And one of the reasons it took a long time is because investors didn't want to invest and we didn't really want their money. And it's ultimately about the future profits, right? You're cutting up future profits if you give them away early to outside investors. So we really grew organically with very little capital, but all the capital came from the members, which is the way it should be.
With no outside funding, the founders leveraged their crop. Let's focus on that briefly because pulling that off is unusual. The coffee they grow in Peru or Nicaragua sells for very little at origin, but once it's roasted and packed in Sacramento, it becomes pretty valuable. The coffee beans that members donated were quite literally seed investments. So who came up with that?
Well, I think it was the model itself, I think, was really Raul del Aguila from Peru. All you have to do is look at the market and see what works. I mean, there's people making millions of dollars, billions of dollars in coffee. Right. So know what works. So the idea is you need to be selling a finished product closer to the consumer. And I think one with value add, you know, able to demand a premium for a branded coffee. So what's different about Pachamama is just the back end. And how we kind of hard coded the business model from the beginning, so that would benefit the people that are growing the coffee.
The fact growers couldn't raise sufficient funds forced members to seek an alternative. That's when you stepped in. Self-funding works in theory, but executing a wholesale roasting, marketing, and distribution operation from scratch without much capital must be challenging.
It's a great business, and it's a great business model, and we know this is what consumers want. If you really actually look at what's important in any business, it's what the consumer is demanding. And you can see that well over 20 years ago with the emergence of fair trade movement and other movements, whereas the consumer really wants to be closer to the producer. So I don't think what we did is particularly hard. What was hard was doing it without any capital, without any cash. And so most people wouldn't have, probably in my position, wouldn't have hung around for 20 years. Okay. You know, that's the hard part. But in reality, you know, there's plenty of money in the world. So now that we've proven this can be done, I don't see why a lot of those problems can't be solved. And I will say that our members, these smallholder farmer cooperatives, invested a lot in Pachamama, and they invested coffee. And that in the early days, they were able to invest coffee, and we turned that coffee into cash and paid the bills, and every year did a little more. But once we actually get some cash investment into this business, watch out. You know, this thing will take off. So we managed to go this far without any of that. And the flip side of that is that we're 100% farmer owned, and all that equity is still in the hands of farmers. And if they want to, they've got the option to go out and sell parts of that at a high price. Because to your point, the company's worth a lot of money. There may not be an exit strategy, but it's worth a lot. And we can bank on that in other ways. And we can really get money flowing back through to the producers through higher the profits.
Let's discuss the shortfalls of a commodity-focused industry. Both tea and coffee have myopic visions. The middle guys see how they can maximize the middle. Retailers always push the merchandisers to maximize revenue at the top end. Growers waste a lot of effort competing with each other to drive down prices and reduce value. They say it's okay because, quote, we've achieved high yields and significant volume, end quote. You're not making much money if you have a significant volume and only sell your stuff for pennies. How do you shift people's mindsets from the shortfalls of commodity production to the benefits of value addition?
Well, that's a great question, and it really boils down to supply and demand, you know, and for the last 400 some years, I believe we've been encouraging producers just to grow more. And that's the solution. More, more, more. More supply, more supply. That's your only way out.
Right.
But of course, it doesn't work that way because as a result, you got no profit, to your point. So when you're producing a commodity, you're powerless at on a global scale, and certainly in the case of coffee. Commodity producers are completely powerless to gain anything above really the cost of production. And a lot of times they're lucky to get that. So you have to focus on demand. You have to focus on raising the price and increasing the power of the commodity producer to be able to sell their produce for something a little more than a commodity. So that's where the investment needs to be on the demand side. And we've seen virtually no investment on the demand side from the producers because they got no profit. So how can they get there? Meanwhile, everyone over here is saying, yeah, heck yeah, I'm going to invest in this this demand because suddenly, coffee goes from being just a commodity worth a couple dollars to being a luxury good worth like $20 a pound. There's very few agricultural products like that. I think coffee's one, tea to a certain extent, lesser extent, possibly cacao, but a lot of value added required there. Wine, but a lot of work in the middle required there too. Coffee, very little actual transformation of the product. The roasting process is very simple. Has to be done ideally close to the consumer in a timely manner and done well. But it's not particularly hard to do, and it doesn't even require huge amounts of capital to do it. So here you got a product that just has so much real value in it, and we can see consumers are willing to pay a lot for it. And yet the producer remains completely powerless, making it, growing a commodity and being told by everyone, well, just grow more. But, you know, that just benefits those of us on this side of the equation is because we're going to have more power to exert over the producer when it comes time to buy the coffee. So maybe we're starting to see some of that change. And I think, you know, the markets will determine supply and demand, but we're starting to see pressure on supply. And that's going to possibly result in very high prices for coffee in the future because the consumer is willing to pay for it.
Your reply segues nicely into a discussion about the monetization of intrinsic value. Promoting coffee, quote, as more than a score, end quote, by emphasizing values such as ethical labor practices, gender equality, and soil revitalization are attributes that can help you add value at the source in the coffee lands. Will promoting coffee's intrinsic characteristics enhance its value in the eyes of consumers?
And that gets down to investing in demand and telling your story, marketing yourself, promoting your commodity as something more than that. But that's very hard for producers to do. And in fact, the people that do it are the roasters and the retailers. So that intangible value exists, but it's not going to the producers almost at all. So the real solution, if you want to get serious about it, is the producer dealing directly with the consumer and getting right to the person who values that coffee and that story and all those intangible values. Get to those people directly as much as possible. So I think there's a distribution, like a logistics move here, was where you just build that bridge and go straight to those consumers and get to them because they value it the most. And then there's, you know, the longer stretch of trying to build up branding around your coffee and getting people to demand your coffee. I think the producers know their coffee's worth of much more. They don't understand how much it's worth because they're not here seeing just how much people are paying for it. And they're not paying the prices that we pay at cafes for a latte. They don't quite understand it that way, but they get it. They know that their pictures are valuable. They see more and more people coming down with cameras and videos and grabbing that story and putting it on their bag and selling it. Well, now they're starting to understand that, wow, you know, like my picture, my face is valuable. My farm, my beautiful shade grown farm is valuable. We're beginning to see that, but they can't really capture it because they don't have access to the consumer in any way. And they, that's the fundamental, you know, the big problem in coffee, I would say, is that the big problem, and I think many people don't understand this, is that producers have no power. They have no power in this system and no ability to charge a higher price. So they're really price takers. They have to take the price that the market demands. Very rarely are they able to get a little bit more than that. And so to really fundamentally change and solve these problems, you have to address that power imbalance. And so in the big picture, we need to find ways to really truly empower farmers and get them closer to the consumer, where the value becomes exponentially more.
Intrigued by what you heard in today's podcast? Would you like to learn more from our global network of T-Biz journalists and tea experts? Remember to visit the T-Biz website for more comprehensive coverage. That's www.t-biz.com. Thanks for listening. Farewell till next week.
Produced by Atavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In partnership with MGM Northfield Park.